You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Every so often, a person walks into the world with a gift so powerful, so undeniable, that it refuses to stay quiet. A gift that does not just see life, but captures it, shapes it, translates it, and then hands it back to us with more meaning than we had before. Tonight's shapeshifter is that kind of man. He is the lens behind some of the most breathtaking visual stories in southern Africa. Not because he takes pictures, but because he understands something most people never learn. That a camera does not capture images. It captures truth. It captures presence. It captures identity. Before he ever presses a shutter, he reads a room. He studies the lights. He listens to the soul. And then he brings out what most people never knew they carried. Our guest tonight is not just an award-winning photographer. He is a creative director with the depth of a painter, a media strategist with the precision of a diplomat, a communications advisor who understands the psychology of influence, and a storyteller trusted by governments, corporates, and public figures alike. Listen, some people take pictures, okay? Henry, Oliver, Hagulandaba, preserves legacies. For years, he has been the quiet architect behind campaigns that move nations, brands that shift culture, and images that live far beyond the moment they were created. Tonight, we celebrate a man who understands both the art and the responsibility of shaping public perception. A man who carries creativity in one hand and strategy in the other. A man who has mastered the language of light, of narrative, and of positioning, and uses it to help people and institutions show the world who they truly are. Ladies and gentlemen, our shapeshifter of the week, the brilliant, the visionary, the incomparable, Henry Oliver Hagulandaba.
Good evening.
Hello, Henry. How are you?
Oh, for a second, I was like, is she talking about me or someone else?
But am I talking about you? Confirm, please.
How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm so excited to be speaking to you this evening. How are you?
No, I'm great. Just actually drove in fast. I was coming from the office. And I was like, wow, 10 past, will I make it? And then, yeah, I made it.
So, I'm here. Nice. You know what?
Yeah.
Tonight we're telling your story, and I hope I can tell it with the same reverence that you've always shown when you tell the stories of others. So are you ready?
Let's get into it.
Let's do it. Tell me about little Henry. What were you dreaming about? I'm always so curious about creatives. Because the way your minds work is just out of this world. So what were you dreaming about as a young boy?
I think the first thing was, I think the influence around, I cannot really say I was a creative.
Okay.
But there's this influence that comes with, I think, seeing your parents, your older siblings doing things that everyone is saying, oh, wow. So our father used to work for the immigration, the government, but he had a side business, which was panel beating.
Okay.
And I used to be so intrigued by the mixing of colors.
Mm.
And it's something that at a young age, I was able to say to people, I know if you mix these colors, this one comes out magenta, yeah. It comes out. You know, and I think it's one of the things that drove me into the creative space.
Mm.
But also we had cameras in the house.
Okay.
And the first camera I got, I think we got as siblings, as kids,
mm-hmm.
is a camera that we all fought for. I think I was around the age of seven, eight.
Okay.
So I used to just take pictures even at church. I'll just take, right now we actually have pictures that at our parents' house that we don't even know the people in those pictures, but I'm the one who took those pictures. And at that time it was really expensive to develop, but our father would just develop those images, and like these days we just put them on the screen, and you
Yes.
know, actually way cheaper now.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, I think the little me came from that end of things,
Yeah.
where a direction is set, certain tools are put in place, and you just follow, and I think here we are.
Now, if you're talking about developing images, Henry, I know that you grew up in a time when careers, and I'm talking about careers, the things that people make money from, was either being a doctor or lawyer or a teacher, photographer. What do you mean? Talk to us about when you decided, hey, this is something that I actually want to pursue.
So I learned, so to be honest, we grew up where we in an era where we were told these are your options. You have to study hard. So I was okay with, I was very good at sciences, I'll say. So I thought I was going to be a vet doctor. And I actually missed the point to become a vet with 1 point. So the closest that I could take was environmental health and science. And then I then did epidemiology, which is pretty much disease case finding. And while I was in that process, even at uni, I was already doing photography. I was a part of the media team at Solus University. So where the media center guys, the guys who moved around with speakers, cameras, you know, making sure that the mic is working. We're filming sermons, we're editing sermons. So that was pretty much. And then later on, when I was now working for City of Harare, I was an intern. I was then called. I then finished my internship there, and most of the reports that I had were reports that were very visual. I'll take pictures. I'd also do small documentaries about certain challenges that we're having in the health sector. And then I was called to start working with the World Bank. They had a project of replacing all the water pipes around the city. So we're doing pretty much your inspection, pretty much on the health side of things. And the guy who was supposed to be the communications director then quit midway. And because of budget constraints of that project, they could not take up any new person. So they was like, Henry, you are the guy who knows these things. You're working with a communications guy. Can you fill in this position? We'll add an extra, you know, percent there. And I was like, let's do it. And then I took over that role, and actually was doing it better than the actual role I was trained for.
Interesting.
And that's how I, and then, I mean, I could afford now to buy my own equipment, and you know, and then I started doing weddings, and then I also started doing, you know, because I was someone who likes taking pictures, I started taking pictures of sunsets. I have a series of three, it's called, the project called 365 Days of Sunsets, Harare Sunsets. So it's literally a sunset, because I had an office on the 8th floor, so you'll be overseeing the city. I think one of the images is the one that is an African award, the Harare Cityscape. And from there on, I started realizing I'm making more money with photography and media related things than, you know, my 8-to-5 job. And then the week I took a leave towards my wedding, that's when I quit. And yeah, you know, family members.
Henry, a week
We
before
have
your
an
wedding.
happy.
Henry, come on.
Why are you doing this?
You love trouble. You love stress.
So it was crazy. But yeah, from there on, that's how I started developing the idea of photography is only a tool, but the other systems, was I experienced doing comms work, there are other things like, you know, strategy, you know, content plan, marketing plans, you know, creating rapport. And then I said, you know, I have to develop the business towards this whole thing to become a consultant, because I was able to see other consultants come in and go when I was working.
Yeah.
So I knew the monies that these guys were being paid.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, these are the monies I want. You know, but it takes time, It takes time, because you have to get into that business loop whereby people have to understand what you do, how you do it, and that you're not going anywhere. You are the guy who knows his business.
Mm.
So that's how I ended up being, you know, starting an agency with a friend, and the history, the rest, I'll say, is history. And yeah.
So you stumbled upon communications, essentially. It happened to you. And that's so interesting, because I think what we don't acknowledge a lot is that even though you are not in the perfect situation or the thing you would have wanted, I don't think there's any experience that goes to waste. I mean, right now you're using all that experience and everything that you've come to know and learn from the strategy side to develop your business and to run it smoothly. And had it not been for those experiences, I'm not saying you wouldn't have figured it out, but the learning curve might have been more steeper.
Yeah, so it's true, because I use most of the scientific methods that we learn. To make decisions. So right now we have a new division, the data-driven decisions. Where we right now, because of digital media, I'll say everyone is now digitally linked. There's so many data points that the internet is collecting on you right now. So with the tools that we have, we're able to predict the next cycle of let's say the next hit thing that's going to happen during Christmas. Because using data and patterns. So we now use those scientific methods to, and because I understand science, it's easy for me to break down a concept to a client to say, if we come from here, this is where we can get to. We've used history, we've used the daily patterns, and this is the prediction. So let's move all our chess pieces this direction. I think we can win. And it has been successful over the past years. We actually literally set up a system during COVID. After we then realized there's so many services that are needed, why not come up with a call center that links to different, you know, companies of people who want different services, from pharmacy, emergency, food. So that has worked well.
Oh, I love it. I absolutely love it. You've said before that photography is more than an image. It is a narrative. And I'm so curious to know, what does story mean to you when you're behind the lens?
A story means, how can I? So let's look at an image. What usually happens in your mind is, with an image, it draws everything, different perceptions. So we can all are looking at the Mona Lisa image, right? And to me, as a guy, I'm probably seeing a beautiful woman. You'd be like, wow, she's flawless hair. I'd like my, you know. So photography draws different emotions. And with those emotions, people can connect with their stories. That's why it's really essential to say, when you have an image is cast there, and what's the people will say, what's the first feeling that you get? Someone will say, ah, it's a warm feeling. Someone who might have a bad experience might say, ah, no, logo and food. You know, stories, the stories give out a different, what can I say, feeling, perception, tone. But you as a creator, you have to make sure that you create something that shapes a positive narrative or an action. Either you're taking for advocacy, what action do you want?
Yeah.
What feeling do you want to convey? So that builds up in story. Unlike video, in as much as we also do videos, the biggest thing that you realize is when you're doing documentaries, images tend to move people a bit deeper than videos. Because with video, when you're doing storytelling with a video, sometimes you have to be very deliberate because you don't want people to stray away. But with an image, you can literally tell that, oh, this is what's being conveyed. Why is the creator of the image, why have we made the image black and white? We want to bring out a bit of sympathy. We want to bring about a strong emotion than when it's color.
Yeah.
Because we always see color, but when it's black and white, sometimes we see something deeper and something more meaningful than, you know, when it's full color. So sometimes it's the storyline has to be, you know, the creator has to make sure that the storyline is impactful and also shares the same emotion with the audience. So yeah, that's how I see storylines.
Oh, that's why you're award-winning, because I'm listening to it, I'm thinking black and white. And I'm trying to think in my mind, because here's what happened. Over the weekend, I was away and I took a video. Someone took a video of me, and I turned the video, which was in color, obviously, to grayscale, right? To black and white. And I'm trying to think why that was and what emotion is invoked in me now that the video is, because there was a reason. And as you're speaking, I'm trying to think, what was I really communicating? Listen, I see why you are award winning, because
so why? If it's video, just imagine now if it's slowed down. We're now going cinematic.
Yeah.
You know, it's slowed down and you're walking, the sunset, even though you do not see the sun, the color of the sun with the black and white, there's an emotion that is pretty much comes out from that. So there's so many ways to tell stories, but sometimes it all dependent on the creator. What do you want to convey? Do you want people to make noise? Do you want people to be sad? Do you want people to be happy? So it's all up to the creator of the image, that what story that they're trying to portray.
Interesting. I'm curious about the moment or a moment behind the scenes, whether it was a shoot or a campaign or a project that changed you, either as a photographer, that changed you as a creative director, a public relations advisor, a strategist. Is there a particular moment you can think of that had you walk in one way and walk out a completely different human being?
Yeah.
Okay.
So yes, so we're doing. I was the creative director, and I was also helping with the set lighting of a show, of a movie called Neria.
Oh, okay.
So Neria 21, which is a remake of the original Neria that was done some time back. So Neria 2021, working with some guys from church. So Neria is a story about a widow.
Okay.
And the challenges that they face after their husband passes away, you know, estate problems, blah, blah, blah. And while we're there are certain things I changed, which the guys most of the comments when I read the comments, I felt it during that time. There are certain things that we made a decision there and there, which wasn't in the script. You know, the lighting and how the camera is going to be moving during that period. So we changed that whole thing. We literally had to spend another day to reshoot. And I then realized this part which everyone is talking about, and it was a sunset. There's a sunset, and she's thinking about the husband and what. And people were like, this reminds me of a time when I had problems like this, and you know, and I sat alone and I solved these problems, you know, at the time. So I then realized that impact or that intuitive decision that you can make also during some of these productions, it can actually change, or it can actually help people on how to solve certain problems. Because one thing that we do, especially in the visual language, is what we call priming, whereby, let's say you want to share some good news, but you don't want to do it there and there, or the bad news. What you do is probably you, what do they call? My grandmother used to say, "Ungabhodebhode, don't go around." You know. So when you're priming, you prime someone, by hinting certain things. So when you're then priming for an audience that is pretty much 2, 3, 4 million, you have to make sure that the narrative or the storytelling aspect is, what can I say, is something that people can relate to and be able to copy, to say, I wish I should do this style if I'm thinking, if I'm having trouble about this situation, why can I not go and sit and watch the sunset, the sunset, you know. So those are some of the things. That's something that's impactful that I remember. Then others, others are crazy strategies that we have used over the years. You know, so yeah, but yeah, usually I think that one is quite strong one that I always remember, because people who know about the work that we do, they always say, "Oh, I remember that scene." I'm like, "Oh, okay." So you actually see, oh, this has been impactful.
Oh, absolutely love it. Now, you've worked with brands, you've worked with governments and communities. How do you manage to shape a message that resonates across different audiences?
I think that the idea is to literally study. You have to actually invest in to love to invest in people. So the idea is to make sure that you, once you have invested that much, you're able to put tools in place, systems in place, people in place. Because at the end of the day, you're not your own person in terms of strategy. Sometimes you have to rely. There are certain clients that we've worked with. They all have everything figured out. The challenge is they are just not confident enough to execute those decisions. So usually, the when you then invest in knowing that client, it helps a lot to say, no, this is a confidence issue, or this is a operating procedure that's wrong. This is probably a patriarchal problem, because sometimes we work with organizations that depend so much on our cultures in Africa. So sometimes you then say, I know this problem is actually too Western. or I mean, this solution is too Western for our culture.
Yeah.
So sometimes you have to literally be, you know, the guy who will make sure that these some of these things are in place. So yeah.
You know, I really believe that, and I may be wrong, you can correct me, that creativity often comes from places of struggle or awakening, right? It's not always bad. So is there a life experience perhaps for you that sharpened your artistic lens the most? Or that sharpened it?
Interesting. I think there's so many, hey. Yeah. I think that my artistic lens comes from pretty much comfort, I'll say.
Okay. Tell us more.
Yeah. So there's a level of, so when you're in the artistic space, there's level of pressure and confusion that's there. So sometimes you need to find a way to decode what you're seeing or the world in your own terms.
Okay.
So one thing that is literally is I've understood patterns faster than most people expect. You know, so you see how the environment works, how certain behaviors work, the loud, the chaotic, you know, the unpredictability of certain emotions. So you literally get into that space and you say, this is where I want to build my internal system to think, to project, to survive. So it becomes like an operating logic.
Yeah.
So there's things around the tone, the timing, you know, those inconsistency patterns, and say, okay, this is where I can be. So I'm trying to think of a particular time. I think the key thing I remember was I was doing a wedding, and the father of the bride was late. It was her second time seeing the father. So in that process, we're being asked to go out of the room because she was crying. It seems as if the father had said, I'm no longer coming. And she was just crying. And then I then sat down and then started watching. So because it was a big room, no one noticed that I was still in the room. So I started taking pictures, natural light. And in that whole chaos and people running around, tissues, others, you know, making calls, you start realizing, I started seeing that those patterns of artistic beauty. And with that, all those images that I took during that time were black and white. They were, and up until today, because anyway, the father ended up coming. To them, it was, when they see beauty now, but to them it reminds them of how also fragile certain things, you know how fragile they can be at certain points in time.
So
I mean, it most of these things come from recognizing those different instruments within the space you are in. So it helps to guide you know, the strategy, the communication.
Totally.
And so your work then cuts through the noise and the underlying structure, you know, to give clarity at the end of the day.
Yeah. I feel like I'm inside a creative's mind who's also very strategic. Hey! This is quite an experience for me. And for somebody who wants to get into the space, right, wants to do work in your field, you mentioned earlier that in your space, in your world, perception is power. And so why do you believe that visual identity is so crucial for anyone who's serious about their craft or their career in your space?
Interesting. So you're looking at pretty much this is your internal, your visual identity, which is when someone sees some of our work, they'll be like, I've caused the way by when we do something that goes on the national TV. People they call, and we just saw something that you did. I've created a visual loop, I would say, where I've never diverted from it for the past probably 15 years. And that visual identity makes sure that I get new clients or recurring clients all the time. So the visual identity usually has pretty much, I think, three things. It helps with reducing doubt.
Okay.
People trust, and it pretty much builds memory.
So
that visual identity is pretty much part of a consistency framework. I always share with my team that we are not the best communications business here in Africa.
Are you sure?
Right. And yeah, I mean, but with the thing that we are very good at is consistency. And because our business, the name of our business, we actually don't have a website, eh?
Oh.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
So most of our work is, I would say 90% of our clients are referrals. Because we can only onboard so much.
Yeah.
So that real consistency in our work pretty much helps to our work to stick and our name to stick. Because we actually have a funny name. Our business is called 11 Dogs.
Okay.
Yeah.
How? Why?
11 dogs can kill a lion.
Okay.
Yeah. So it's 11 dogs. So with that, it also helps us with marketing in terms of people don't forget. They'll be like, they might literally forget my name. They'll be like, but yeah, my guy, you are what? 7 dogs, 13 dogs, like 11 dogs. So because we're using 11 and, dogs, these are funny, odd, not so normal. People know them. So joining them together makes me. So when the visual identity and consistency literally shapes authority. That's one thing I can say, because people are like, these people know what they're doing. They've been doing this for this number of years.
Yeah.
Pretty much everything, when people literally assume all these things are deliberate. And sometimes they're deliberate, sometimes they're not. So the challenge is sometimes when some of our guys are coming up in the industry, they know that visual identity and consistent, and literally they lose leverage. And then they do at the end of the day, they end up saying, look, this media business doesn't work. They get misread, undervalued, they think they got into the wrong field. But to be honest, you're not in the wrong field. It's when you just miss those points, difficult to control. It's difficult to control. So I think that's why, when you're creating a brand, that visual identity is pretty much a non-negotiable. So for anyone in any field within that craft, you have to literally have an identity that's very, very consistent. So even recently we hired a guy that literally makes sure that we are now very, very deliberate. We've been deliberate, but now when you have someone whose job is to make sure that you're deliberate about that your identity and consistency, I think we're taking ourselves to the next stage, which is pretty much continental, I'd say.
Yeah, so good. So, so good. Now, the truth is, Henry, people or the public see the awards, but never the discipline. What are the habits and the routines and the rituals that sustain your excellence?
The rituals, yo.
Nah, not rituals like...
No, I know. I think discipline. The challenge with our industry is lack of discipline, I'd say.
Yeah.
From my end, my habits are very simple. I do the same thing literally every day, with the mindset of higher output. And I make sure that I'm very, very, I mean, when you're in the creative space, you don't want to be thinking too much.
Yeah.
I was reading Steve Jobs' biography. And the guy, the writer then said, he asked Steve Jobs what he does, why he wears the same clothes every day.
Yes.
Pretty much removing mental fatigue, because you don't want to be overthinking early in the morning. So I've tried doing that, but you know what, Tina, we are married, and our wives are like, why cheat every day? So sometimes I try by all means to be very minimalistic of the things I do, especially morning routines. I'm not very, very consistent about it.
Yeah.
But I also try to make sure that I work in blocks of 30 minutes. 30 minutes in 1 hour, 30 minutes 1 hour.
Yeah.
If I get into a meeting that surpasses pretty much 30 minutes, I'm already bored. I'm not. But even if it's getting longer, we have to make sure that we work in blocks, so that we don't lose anyone, especially in the creative industry where we're trying to have fresh ideas, fresh minds. You have to make sure that you are leading a team that's on a deep focus level. I also try, I don't think I document everything. I've got my memory is not too bad, but okay. I try by all means to record some of the meetings in terms of writing the notes. I think one big thing is trying to make sure that when I'm working on a project, I don't engage myself on a different projects, on different projects, because it makes me lose the momentum or the, you know, that initial idea that you had for the other projects. So sometimes when I'm working on a project, let's say like we're doing a Christmas campaign, I cannot be thinking about a back to school campaign type of thing, because it literally messes how you then execute the Christmas campaign. So you always try by all means. I think some of these routines, you have to make sure, I just have to make sure that I can predict how my day is going to end.
Yeah.
So that I'm always on that positive. I don't want to be thinking, yo, I might have missed this. So I tried by all means to work in blocks.
That makes sense. That makes so much sense. Henry, the industry is evolving. AI, digital editing, automated creativity. What does the future of visual storytelling look like to you? I mean, I've seen so many images online made by Gemini, and it's hard to tell the difference, although you can if you really if you've got a keen eye for it. But people are opting to do things themselves. What does this mean for you? Does it not scare you? Is it fueling you? Talk to me about the way the industry is evolving and your role in it.
So we're actually happy, to be honest.
Oh, tell me more.
So in the ever since we started using I think AI for especially document drafting, scripting, I mean, some of us, the English bundles are not so good.
So, okay.
So it literally helped us to a certain level. And then this year has been quite interesting, because that's when we started having a bit of lots of synthetic content, whereby we are narrating the let's say we're doing a we're narrating the feeding of the 5,000. We literally can prompt a whole story around it. So am I afraid that clients can do some of this work by themselves? Not really, because at the end of the day, we are literally getting to a point where everyone understands and knows how to use AI. Everyone understand what AI is, but then they do not have time, or they don't have patience.
That's true. Or the creative direction that you bring.
They don't have the patience.
Yeah.
So we had a client that used to, we had a contract, I think four years now. And they literally cut the budget and say, oh no, our marketing team will be doing most of these things in-house, blah, blah, blah. The guys had never done those things. So they've been doing, they were managing their social media platform by themselves. And then things started going, you know, because they just want to output things they're also creative.
Of course.
And the CEO, I bumped into the CEO, and I'm like, how is it going? You guys kicked us out. And then he was like, no, I actually wanted to call you that. Why are you guys making all these funny things? They're not nice. The creativity, the direction, I was like, no, our contract was cut and we paid for the rest of the year, and we're no longer working with you guys. And then they had to bring us back, and we've taken back over the account. It's literally, to be honest, I like that people are experimenting. I think for good use, but as we are going further, that creativity side is still going to come back to us. I mean, the market is shifting, but it's also producing a new style of editing, because it's quicker. It gives a, you know, we can we can do storyboards faster, I would say. The pre-production, we can do it faster, and it has helped with our turnover in terms of the amount of output we then have to bring out. So pretty much, I think it has helped us to expand our reach. You know, speeding production, we can now also manage some of our time quite, quite well, using that AI as a leverage. I think for the work that we do, I think the clarity, vision, and strategic accuracy is key. And AI then comes later. Those skills still are valuable
100%.
to the business.
And lastly, Henry, as we wrap up, if your entire body of work were distilled into one message for the world, what would that message be?
If my entire body of work is, you're trying to think into one message, control your narrative, or someone will control your narrative. I mean, think of it. The story that you sell is your power. The clarity of that is what protects you. The ability to shape how people understand you, your work, your intentions, pretty much determines the opportunities, the influence, and pretty much I'll say survival. I don't know. I'm thinking in a survival, I'll say. Pretty much you stop once you understand how to control your narrative, you stop moving blindly. You build certain things in a very fashionable, deliberate, consistent way. I think that helps a lot. Pretty much that's what I can say.
I hear you. I hear you.
But I think because when I work with so many high net worth individuals, and that's the only thing that they worry about, the narrative. What will my wife say? What will my kids say? What will my community say, the church? Narrative control is key.
Man, I've loved this conversation because it seems like for you, the camera is more than a tool. It's become a mirror. You've used it as a bridge. It's a legacy keeper, something that people can look back to, and remember days and use it to shape what comes next. And I really just want to, I haven't seen your images or some of your work. But even from how you're speaking about it, like I did say, it was such an experience for me. It was like I was literally in your mind trying to pick apart certain things as you were speaking. And I just believe in my heart of hearts from how I'm hearing you shape your narrative around the work that you do, that the people who do get to work with you and who have gotten work from you, they are very grateful that you haven't just given them images. Or videos, you've given them truth, you've given them beauty, you've given them a way to see themselves with new eyes. And I think that is the biggest gift, more than just those JPEGs or whatever formats files come through. People get to see themselves differently because you had the courage and the bravery and the foresight to stand behind that lens and interpret the world, their world to them through your eyes. And yeah, I'm so grateful for the work that you are doing and for reminding us that our stories don't just deserve to be captured, but also to be controlled by us. We can't give people the power to control our narratives, that our visions deserve to be shaped. And from what you've shared, that our purpose deserves to see the light of day. And for that, truly, truly grateful. Thank you so much for pulling through.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
All the best
All right, cheers. Thank you.
to more high network clients. Bye.
Bye.
I
Thank
caught
you.
that. And with that, I am Nompumelelo Mbonani, and I hope you have just made sense of your business. Fresh mercies tomorrow. Ciao for now.
Adventist World Radio SID Media. We are not general practitioners. We are specialists in Bible-based content.